Blog Talk Radio.
Angela Butler. Today the guest is Minister John Flagg. Today we will be discussing the alarming rate of teenage pregnancy. We will be talking mainly about the young men who are teenagers who are becoming fathers at a very young age. So without any further delay, Minister John Flagg. Hello, Minister Flagg. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Angela. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
So we're talking about the young men who are becoming fathers young. I know a lot of people focus on the young women, but I'm trying a different angle, you know. So let's see how it goes, how the listeners like it. Okay. What are the statistics on teenage pregnancy within the United States for teenage fathers?
What are the statistics? Well, the national surveys indicate that the rates of teenage fathers in this country are higher for inner-city youth, and the percentage of males involved in pregnancy are under 18 years of age. So, to me, that is an alarming statistic, and that we need to do what we can to try to address this matter. I find from this survey that was conducted by Head Start Resources is that between 2-7% of these male teenagers are fathers under the age of 18, and that's a 26% number of our young males that are involved in pregnancy situations under the age of 18.
Okay.
And then amongst sexually active teenage males, 14% have made a partner pregnant. That's 1 in 7.
Okay, that's high. That's a high rate. That's a very high rate. Now, a lot of emphasis, like I said earlier, is put on the young mothers, and I'm not trying to exclude the young mothers or anything, but how does being a father as a teenager affect the young men later on in life?
Well, one of the main things that it affects is their ability to stay in school. This survey determined that men who are teenage fathers are less likely to finish high school compared to young men who are not teenage fathers. 87% of these teenage males who are 2 or more years behind in school are sexually active. And so it's indicative of a paradigm in this country where we are not instilling a sense of value and responsibility into our young men to help them to stay in school. According to the 2002 census data, which was based on 1999 data, the average high school grad earned $25,900 a year. The average college grad earned $45,400 per year, a significant difference of $19,500. And the difference in 40 years accumulates to be $780,000, almost $1 million in differences in income. So it's incumbent upon us to try to do what we can to encourage our young men to stay in school and to do what they can to do the best as they can in school.
Okay.
So it can affect their future earning capability. It can affect their future purchasing power, their ability to take care of their family, because, you know, if they have to, you know, if they are going to be responsible and help take care of a child they have as a teenager, that's why they drop out of school, because they in essence try to work or try to get a job. And then they're kind of locked into a revolving door where they'll never get hardly anything above minimum wage jobs.
So not only is it affecting the young women's life, it's also devastating to the young fathers. Okay.
Well, naturally speaking, because, you know, we as a society build expectations into our young men that one day you're going to grow up and you're going to, you know, become a man, and, you know, it's your responsibility, it's your initiative to take care of your family, be the leader in taking care of your family, you know, be the breadwinner, bring the bacon home. But then the oxymoron of that situation is that we aren't instilling in them the value system of what a good education can bring about. And so education does translate into dollars and financial power.
Okay.
And in this day and age, you can't get away without having an advanced education as much as you can.
Yeah, it's almost getting to the point where you have to have a college degree to even work at McDonald's.
Right.
So
now you almost have to have a PhD.
Getting that technical.
Right.
How can adults prevent their teenage sons from impregnating these very young women and you know, at a very young age, these teenage mothers? What can be done to prevent this?
I don't know whether you can prevent it or not, because, you know, children are going to experiment. I think we as parents should do what we can to instill a value system and a system of accountability and responsibility in our children from the day they're born. There's no need in you trying to tell Junior not to drink alcohol and then you're drinking wine. You see what I'm saying? Or Junior, don't do drugs when you're smoking cigarettes. I mean, children are going to look at the examples they have before them. So your children will become what you are. So we should be what we want them to be. You know, we should live the life. We're their first role models. We're their first, you know, as far as a young lady is concerned, the only man in her life is typically her father. So she models her future relationships after the relationship she has with her father. And the same with a young man and his mother. You know, the young man's mother is going to instill a sense of values in him as to how he should treat a woman, how he should respect her, how he shouldn't, you know, push up on her and try to get her to do something she doesn't want to do. Of course, the male in our society is characteristically encouraged to be the aggressor, to be the person that does the courtship, initiates the courtship in relationships. But we don't teach that in the right way, or we don't teach it at all. And so, you know, when the hormones start raging, as these children start going through the changes of life they go through as teenagers, you know, they have no guidelines. They have no structure in some situations where, you know, they know the difference between right and wrong. And one mistake I make could cost me a lifetime of opportunities. So all it takes is one time. I've talked with young people where they said, we only had sex one time. That's all it takes. It's all it takes to get pregnant. And I think the educational process from the home is a good way to mitigate or minimize the possibility of teenage pregnancy. You know, you sit down with your children at an early age and explain to them the facts of life. They should learn the facts of life in the street or even in the educational system. They should learn it from their parents. The parent identifies with them the parts of their body, the parts of the other sex's body. Let them know where children come from. They don't come from stork. They don't come from, you know, cabbage patches or any other place like that. This is how children are made. And they can do it in a nice manner. They don't have to be ugly and you know, worldly with how they describe these situations to their children. They can use the medical terms, or they can even use the street terms so that they'll know what these young people are talking about now. The dangers of sexually transmitted diseases, I mean, that should be enough to scare any of these children away from having sex like that. So I think the educational process from the home is probably the best way to try to stem the tide of teenage pregnancy.
Okay. How should responsible fatherhood be taught to these teenage fathers? We talked a little bit about prevention and things like that, but once they become fathers at, you know, 15, 16, 17, 14, how should this responsible father be taught to these teenage fathers? I mean, they're young. So how can that be taught?
Well, the instructions should come from home. If it doesn't come from home, it should come from a trusted extended member of the family. You know, we know that you have a lot of single parent homes that are endeavoring to raise children. Yes, the ideal situation is for an intact family, mother and father being there for the children. But in situations where there aren't intact families, then, for instance, if it's a woman that is trying to raise her children by herself because of an absent father, you know, then hopefully she has a brother someplace that can act as a role model, or her father, the children's grandfather, can be that person, or an uncle, somebody she can trust that's in the family that can help her to instill the value system of what is called for a male to be a responsible young man and eventually a responsible adult. I don't think there is an excuse for a person to say, well, I don't have a husband, I don't have a wife, so therefore, you know, I'm handicapped. There is somebody you can find in your family, hopefully, that you can, you know, bring into the mix of things to help you raise your children and to instill a sense of values in them that will help them to become responsible adults. I think that the best way we can do is make our children knowledgeable of the consequences of their actions. All actions have consequences. And of course, we need to also let them know that the older you get, your consequences become more severe, you know, because you're older, you're accountable for more. And so if you're disobedient at 5 years old and that situation is not dealt with, by the time you get to be a teenager, you're not going to be obedient to civil authorities or teachers or principals in the high school. And if you're not obeying them or following their rules and guidelines when you get out of school, then you're going to have to deal with law enforcement and the other systems of government, and they're going to come down harder on you. And so, you know, it's best to nip that thing in the bud and try to raise a young teenager rather than trying to change a grown man. It's much difficult to try to change a person after they become grown or an adult.
Now, what would the statistics and percentages on young men becoming fathers as teenagers, what were those again?
26% of males involved in pregnancy are under 18 years of age. And between 2% and 7% of male teenagers are fathers.
Okay.
And 1 in 7 young males have made a woman pregnant.
Okay. How does unplanned fatherhood affect the family, the parents of these young men, are the guardians of these young fathers? How does it affect them, the unplanned pregnancy?
Well, it changes everything for everyone. It takes a village to raise a child, you know, in terms of a young man. You know, it could affect his ability to stay in school. One of the statistics I found interesting is that the average male would finish 12.3 years of school by age 22. But a teenage father will only finish 11.3 years by the time he's age 22. Either they take longer to get out of school or they don't graduate from high school at all. So more than likely, if you're a teenage father, you're not going to finish high school. It makes it more difficult, you know, but there is no excuse for a child not to finish school. They can do homeschooling. They can do online type classes now to stay in school. So it's how big you want to is, how bad do you want to succeed? And, of course, it changes the equation for the whole family, you know. It means a plan B has to be put in effect because, you know, we were not expecting this to happen in our lives, and so now we've got a child to take care of. And so in a young male situation, it may mean helping the mother pay child support or financial support to help raise this child.
No.
So now you're going to bring two families together, okay?
Now, I'm ignorant to this, and I shouldn't be, but I am. I'd like to know who pays the child support. If you're 14, 15, 16 years old, and you don't have a job, who pays the child support for the child? 9 out of 10 is the parents, right?
It's going to be the parents, yeah. That's who the civil action is going to be against. Unless they can work out some kind of civil deal without going to court. But it can be a very tenuous matter because, as you say, how many jobs can a 15, 16-year-old get that's going to, you know, provide some reasonable source of income for our child? Children are expensive.
Yes,
and
they
are. Yeah, typically the lawsuits are brought against the parents or the family.
Okay. All right.
And it can cause sometimes harsh words to be said between families or bad feelings or blame game will kick in, you know. But there's no time for that. You know, you got a child to raise. So what are you going to do? We got to do something.
Okay.
This was unintentional, yeah, it was unplanned, yeah, but now the child is going to be born. So what do we do? How do we work this thing out?
All right. All right, listeners, we have Minister John Flack on Show Talk with Angela Butler. We're talking about teenage fathers and unplanned pregnancies. We're going to go to break, and we'll come back and finish talking to Minister Flack.
A special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size. Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. And Decline provides world-class service. We coordinate quality events. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, florists, photographers, transportation, hairstylists and makeup artists, daily itineraries, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations. Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as Dreamweavers.
The economy, business, technology, and creative arts, choose
the Digital Conglomerate magazine.
Not only do they give you all the latest information, but they're there for you 24/7, baby, giving you the 411 and all you need to know, baby. Visit the Digital Conglomerate magazine online. Just Google us, baby. We're everywhere. Let's get down to business. So you're having that company function or business function, and you need the proper services to get that business menu pumped. Okay, here's the solution. Call Exquisite Barista Services. Exquisite Barista Services has the experience to create a signature beverage for your business or organization. Services also include barista training, custom beverage menu creation, food and beverage pairing, and so much more. Visit Exquisite Barista Services online at www.exquisiteexpressinc.com or better yet, call 210 210-701-0143. That's 210-701-0143. Don't take your chances on the other man. Get that grand plan and choose Exquisite Barista Services.
All right, listeners, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. We have Minister John Flack on the show. We're talking about fatherhood and unplanned pregnancy for teenagers, young men, teenage young men. Minister Flack.
Yes.
I'd like to know why so many churches or ministers are against unplanned pregnancies or families.
I don't know that they are. I don't have any
Well, teaching it in the church, teaching responsibility and not to do it in church. Why is the church so against that?
I don't know that the church is against it or is not being taught. I don't have a sampling as to, you know, what goes on in Church America to know, you know, what pastors are teaching it or what churches are teaching it and which ones aren't. But I think that it's something we do need to talk about at that level because it does affect, you know, what affects one in the church is going to affect all of us in the church. And like it takes a village to raise a family, part of that family's village is the church, the local church. So I really can't talk about any, you know, what percentage of churches, Baptist, Methodist, Episcopalian, Catholic, or whatever, talk about these matters or against these matters or not against it. I think any pastor that's worth his weight in gold will deal with matters as they come up in his church or as he sees things happening in his church or their church to address these issues when they come up, either from the pulpit or else in private counseling sessions. I think it has to be something that the church has to address, either through what the Word of God says about, you know, entering into relationships before marriage or after the marriage, such that and God planned it that way because God is a God of order. He knows best how things should be done as far as the family is concerned, and when we take those things out of order, those attributes out of order, then we're going to cause problems for ourselves. Most of the problems we have in life are because of two reasons, and that is we act without thinking or we keep thinking while without acting. And so I think sometimes people get involved in not only, you know, illicit sex or sex before marriage, but, you know, other types of behaviors that get us in trouble is because we don't think before we do. We don't think about the consequences, or we don't think we're going to get caught, or we don't think it's going to happen to us. And some people do get away with it. Some people go on for years and get away with doing what they do, and then some people get caught the first time. And so, you know, it's something that we need to talk about. We need to discuss frankly and openly with our teenagers. It needs to be a balanced approach from the home, from the church, and also from the educational system. I'm not going to negate what the educational system can put in place because we learn that in biology classes. We learn that in sex ed classes. But I think it should first come from the home because children trust their parents more than anyone. You know, they're the first mentors they have in life, in an ideal situation. They're the first mentors, the first ones that they trust. I trusted my mom and dad before I trusted anybody, you know, because I knew that they wouldn't lie to me.
Yes. Okay.
And so, and I think that's the way it is in a lot of families, you know. Children would do just about anything their parents tell them to do because they trust them.
Okay. All right. How many of these, okay, now, how does unplanned pregnancy affect both teenagers, the mother and the father, in the long run? How does this affect them? Now, I know you went over a lot of it, but mm-hmm. for those who don't have children that are not grandparents or the guardians who have these children, what how does this affect them? I mean, both of them.
Well, it's going to radically change their life. You know, I would say that 100%, if not 99% of all teenage pregnancies are unplanned or unintentional. I mean, that's my statistic. I don't think that they enter into relationships with each other with the intent of becoming pregnant. I think it happens because they, you know, either they have an unprotected sex or they're just pushing up against the stats. But whatever the case may be, I don't think that they really plan to change their lives and alter their lives by having a child to raise. But be that as it may, when it happens, you know, you're talking changes and differences for the next 18 to 20 years because that's what it's going to take to raise this child and to, you know, bring them to a state of adulthood and seeing them out of school. So mostly
Not only that, 18, they're legally responsible themselves. Their parents are no longer legally responsible for the child support. And with the child support laws the way they are now, there are many young men getting records for failure to pay and losing, in some states, their driver's license, their driving privileges, though.
Right. Getting their income tax returns garnished. And, you know, and you're talking, the child support in most states is going to typically stop when the child gets out of high school, or some states is like at a certain age, you know, 19, 20, 21, whatever the state laws are. So you know, they're going to be on the hook, and you're right, they could even be incarcerated for disobeying a judge's order. But it means a change in lifestyle. You know, if the young people were accustomed to, you know, going skating on Friday nights and going to the movies on Thursday night and, you know, and doing this and hanging out, you know, at the theaters on a particular day or whatever, going out to the park. Now they can't do that because I've got to get a babysitter or I've got to get somebody to watch my child or else I have to take the child with me. You know, so this carefree life that a teenager should be able to live. I think when you're a teenager, you don't have to work. You know, an ideal teenage life, you don't have to work. You know, your parents are, you know, helping you along if you want to work. Earn you some mad money, you know, most parents will let you do that as long as your grades aren't affected. You know, that's a pretty carefree life. You're not making house payments. You're not making car payments. You're not paying for utilities or anything like that. So it's a pretty carefree life. So now this life is going to change because now you got to buy diapers, you got to buy formal, you got to take the kid to the doctor, you know, you got to buy clothes. By the time you buy this set of clothes, without growing that set of clothes, you got to, it's just a never-ending thing that some kids just can't deal with. You know, they want to go to the party. Their mother tells them, no, who's going to take care of your kid? You can't. No, I've already raised my kid. You got to take care of your child. You're the mother now. You're the father now. Y'all got to work this thing out. And we've got a lot of grandparents now raising children.
Yes. There are a lot of grandparents raising children, so it affects mm-hmm. the whole family for generations.
Right,
and even to the grandmother's generation. Yes,
I don't think we should throw these children away, either. You know, when you haven't touched on this, but you know, there was a situation I was reading about where the young lady was pregnant and she wants to keep the child, but her parents want to abort the child. And I think that's honorable that the young lady wants to raise the child. You know, we don't know what great person that child may become. Might be a president of the United States one day. So we never know. I think if the parents can't afford to raise a child, they don't have to kill it. I mean, they can always give it up for adoption. A lot of people wanted children for adoption. So I think that's one way to deal with the abortion crisis in this country. You know, is you don't have to kill the child. You don't have to put the child to death. We understand that it's the mother's choice in this country, but we don't know what great person, what great leader, what great musician, what great movie actor, what great engineer, lawyer, whatever this person may become in life. And I've known people who were who have told me that their mother was going to abort them, but they decided not to. And I look at what they became in life.
Yeah, not 100% for abortion, but I'm not 100% against it. In certain cases, like if the child is molested,
sure,
incest has been committed in the family, they're way underage, I don't feel like the mother should have to raise that child. That's the only time I'm for abortion. And I may be wrong for it, but that's the only time. Molestation cases. Okay. Are there any answers that you have for this epidemic of young fathers? And yes, of course, young mothers becoming mothers. Is there any answers that you have? Because I feel like you did the research and you counsel people and you are a minister. Are there any answers for this?
I think that there's always an answer. According to Matthew 21 and 22, you know, Jesus talks about, have we prayed about it as much as we've talked about it? We need to talk about it, but before we talk about it, we need to pray about it. You know, before we bring children into this world, we need to understand that it's going to take two parents working together, whether they're married or not, whether they're living together or not. It's going to take two parents to raise these children, and they need to put all differences aside and do the best thing for the best interest of the children, because the children did not ask to be born. And so we should never make a child feel unwanted or unaccepted because, you know, well, you know, we got drunk one night and that's how you were born and all that. You know, we don't need to even deal with stuff like that. So, you know, the child is here. The child is going to be born. And, you know, we need to instill values in our teenage kids before they become teenagers to teach them responsibility so that they can become responsible adults and take care of what they bring into the world or what they birth into the world. I think education and trying to live a godly life will help them tremendously. And we're going to make mistakes, you know.
And
we're going to still make mistakes. So, you know, it's best for us not to beat them up and criticize them and talk down to them, because when that is all said and done, the child is still pregnant, you know?
Yes.
We still have to deal with this situation.
Do you think more abstinency should be taught?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it should be done. You know, I think you should set a high standard with anything you do. You know, I'm a very strong advocate of education, and always talk to young people, and I'll ask them, you know, are you an A-level student, which means you shoot for the A mark. You may not get to the A mark, but at least you shot for that mark. And so, you know, you always shoot for a target that you don't think you can reach. Yeah, is abstinence a target you should shoot for? Sure, it should be. It's very hard when you see what comes on MTV and the television stations and all this, you know, loose sex that the sitcoms and all these TV shows talk about. It's very difficult for these young people. But somebody has to set a standard for them to say, this is how we plan to do things in this household. And this is how, these are what our expectations are. Raise your expectations up real high so that your children can try to reach them and not be so dogmatic and you know, don't do as I do, but do as I say do. Don't have those kind of rules in place. Because it's difficult for Junior to be respectful of a woman if his father is out, not being faithful to his mother. You know, so it's leading by example.
Okay. All right. How many teenage fathers have one or more incarcerated parents? Do you know?
I don't know that statistic. I haven't looked at that one.
Okay. All right. How many of these teenage fathers end up incarcerated themselves?
I don't know the answer to that question either. That was not part of this survey that was done. But it did say 50% of teenage fathers have had some criminal justice involvement versus 22% of non-teenage fathers.
What's the percentage on that?
50% of teenage fathers have had some criminal justice involvement.
Okay.
So over half of the teenage fathers have had some criminal, have had some interaction with the criminal justice system. I don't know what the basis of that statistic is, but it appears that the percentage is lower for non-teenage fathers. It could be that the teenage fathers are having to do things to try to bring money into the household. I don't know. I'm just surmising that. But that is an interesting stat.
All right. All right. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say, Minister Flack? Minister John Flack?
We just need to be role models for all of our young people. You know, I think that's why the Boys and Girls Clubs and you know, there are organizations like that, they can reach out to young people, males and females, to be a big brother. Big Brother, Big Sisters is another organization that helps, you know, provide mentorship to young people. I've participated in various Big Brother, Big Sisters activities, and I know how important it is when these young men, these young women have somebody to look up to. I remember one time when I was in the juvenile detention center ministering to some young people, one of the young men said that when he got out, he said, "I look at how you guys love us so much. You leave your families, you leave your free time. You could be at home watching ball games or whatever, but you come out here to help us turn our lives around." And that is a tremendous act of love. Mentorship. And the young man said, he said, "I want to do what you guys do when I get out of here. I'm going to try to talk to young people to say you don't want to do silly stuff to get yourself incarcerated or to get yourself kicked out of school." And they just brought tears to my eyes. I said, you know, one out of 80-something kids said this, okay?
Okay. All right.
Let's all of us see what we can do to each one reach one. If each of us can reach one person, we will have done a great thing.
Yes. I think that you're right about grandmothers raising their great-grandchildren, or their grandchildren, because that's a growing thing too, for grandmothers to be raising their children, because the grandmothers are getting younger and the mothers are getting younger. So it used to be unusual to see a 35-year-old or a 37-year-old mother as a grandmother, but unfortunately it's becoming more and more common.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, but you know, I have to give these grandmothers praise and credit for how they didn't abandon their children either, and grandchildren
too. Yes, true.
I think that's commendable, because the whole thrust of being a family is that you don't want to break up your family. You want to do everything you can to keep your family together, everything within your power to bring family together and keep it together. So that means bringing your children in, your grandchildren in, to give them a jump start in life, and God honors that. He does honor that.
Yes. I would blame anyone for, you know, point the finger at this person or that person, because I'm going through some things myself with my own child. But I thought this would be a good show topic to bring more awareness to it. I'm sure a lot of people are already aware of this, but I wanted to put it out there, because it is a growing epidemic, and it's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Do you have any other questions?
No, sir, I don't.
I want to leave this statistic with you, though.
Okay.
One of the questions that came up in the survey that says approximately 48% of 18 to 19-year-olds were in college in the year 2004 when the survey was done, out of 7.7 million total, which meant that 3.7 million 18 to 19-year-olds were in college. We're talking males now.
Okay.
So almost half of these teenagers are in college. And out of the 28 elite colleges, including Ivy League schools like Harvard and Yale and Brown University, you only have 109,000. So, you know, the more exclusive the university was, the numbers dropped more significantly, with only 46,000 students being in Ivy League schools. So there were a total of 10.4 million students in college in the year 2004. So that leaves about 2.7 million that were not teenagers, because everybody that's in college is not the same age anyway. You got adults going back to school, and you got people going to school, you know, in later years in life. But we're talking 18 to 19-year-olds, 48% of them are teenage males.
All right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
We need to get that number. You know, we should get that number up higher.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. All right. Minister Flack, thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I look forward to having you back, hopefully, either next Sunday or the Sunday after. I hope we can make these conversations a regular Sunday thing at least twice a month, if not more.
We can do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Minister Flack. Thank you for your wisdom, and thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Angela, and we will look forward to speaking with you again.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, you've been listening to Minister John Flack. Minister Flack.
Yes.
You're a minister of which church? A member of which church?
I'm a member of the Body of Christ Church International USA in College Park, Georgia.
Okay. All right.
3650 Flat Shoals Road.
Okay. All right. All right, listeners. Thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Everyone, have a good night.
Thank you.